Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 38. Today, we're talking AI. Just so much happening all the time. I feel like this is a good first concrete example of all of the work that we've been doing and all of the forecasts saying it can be this impactful, you know, easy to put on a PowerPoint presentation, very different to see it in practice. But Brett, what is the news with Klarna that's making people really appreciate the power here?
Yeah. Well, first, actually, let me describe how we've been thinking about AI software and kind of how much value it can deliver. And it's basically that AI software within the enterprise should be a productivity multiplier for the enterprise. So basically for all of knowledge workers, and that's a big category because by 2030, there's going to be roughly $30 trillion in knowledge work wages paid. And the way we had modeled it and still model it is kind of you have the opportunity to boost knowledge worker productivity by 9 times, but maybe 50% of enterprises or knowledge workers will have done that. So it averages out to a 4.5 times knowledge worker productivity boost. And then enterprises are going to pay for that software, not the full 4.5 times, but some small percentage of that. We model it roughly 10% of that productivity boost. And you do all the math and you say, hey, there should be $14 trillion in AI software spend by 2030, which is a very, 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 very large number because across all of IT, there's only $4 to $5 trillion being spent per year. And so then Klarna, in preparing to spit shine their IPO, put out a press release saying that they are saving $40 million annualized, roughly, by launching AI software against their call center agents, and that kind of more than, I think it's 2/3 of their call center volume, or it's really not call center, but it's like chat, is being handled by AI, and it can do it in 2 minutes per customer interaction versus 11 minutes. And actually it reduces the time that people have to, having chatted with the customer agent, come back to chat with it again by 25%. So it's roughly an 8 times productivity improvement in terms of like time to providing an answer to a customer. And if you do the math on how much they're saving in kind of salaries versus how much they're spending on OpenAI, you can derive to roughly it's maybe $50,000 per month on OpenAI versus something on the order of 40-fold of that that they were previously paying for customer service agents. So it's a lot of puts and takes there, but net, it's a huge savings for Klarna at a better experience for end customers. And it roughly conforms to the way that we're mapping this overall space, where enterprises pay a fraction of the amount for the productivity boost that they get, and they end up providing better in service to customers and get a big ROI on that AI software spend.
And this wasn't a firing of employees either, right? I thought that was another interesting point. It's not that they're replacing, it's increasing the bandwidth capacity of everyone. And, you know, it's a growing pie, not a shrinking pie type of environment.
Yeah, I think that's, to me, that's the almost the most interesting thing about this is think about how often you've contacted a company to like try to get something fixed. Like you never want to do that because it's always such a terrible experience. You know, if you call them, you're on a call center tree. You have to like say, no, operator, like get me to a person. If you end up in one of those chat bots, it's like the person doesn't really help you. Their responsiveness is slow. You get distracted by something and then they time out because they can't have a human agent just waiting for you to respond to some question they ask that you're kind of like half paying attention to. And so what do you do instead? It's like you go to Google your problem. You try to solve it yourself without interacting with the company because the company interaction is so unpleasant. Well, like actually this should result in kind of those company interactions being much more productive and pleasant. So then people will do it a lot more. And so kind of the way I think about at least a base level way to model it is if this is 8 times more productive, if you're only spending 2 minutes instead of, you know, 11 minutes plus a 25% chance that you have to call back again or type back again. So 2 minutes versus 15, you're probably going to be like 8 times more likely to go in that channel. And so you're going to drive a lot more customer service interaction volume than you had before, which then, you know, for specialist cases, we'll rely on like an actual in-person agent dealing with the harder problems at the back end of that sequence.
Do we know how long the deployment was here? As in, how long did it take to train this OpenAI model to Klarna's data to get to this point? I mean, OpenAI ChatGPT hasn't been around for a long time. So, you know, we're only working with a few years here or even less. But did they give that figure? I'm curious.
Not to my knowledge. And I'm not even sure it's a custom, like a fine-tuned GPT-4 model. I'm fairly certain that they are just... they're probably doing some, you know, prompt engineering up front, as in you set up the agent in a way, and they may be doing a, you know, retrieval augmented generation. So they have, and they almost certainly are, where they have some corporate docs that the system can refer to in providing answers to people. That's, you know, it's not as simple as like, you know, developing your own GPT on OpenAI, but it may be like as simple as doing that and then kind of like experimenting with it and then making it more and more complex. They just started at the beginning of this year, or really like end of January to launch it. GPT-4 hasn't been out, or at least GPT-4 Turbo hasn't been out for that long. And I think you can extend it to every like customer facing kind of sales agent type role, should and will have an implementation like this that people will like.
Right.
Well, to what extent do you think this is kind of just polishing up before a potential transaction? Or is it like they are particularly good? Because as you said, it's like this should be applicable quite broadly. And it's like, you, in theory, there should be press releases like this, you know, every day for the next 3 years. So is it they were good and they executed it well? And it's like, wow, Klarna did something good here. Or do you think it's more broad based and others will do the same, right? It seems odd that it's just one person saying this, or that's what I'm trying to get my head around.
I think if you imagine you're a company that is, you know, trying to sell yourself to the public and you have a set of backward looking financials and you're wanting to make a you know, a really tangible case, like, hey, here's how I'm going to save, you know, $40 million off the SG&A line, then, or I wonder if that's in the, actually the gross margin line, but the probably SG&A, but then like they do the press release specific to point to that, to be like, yes, we have this pathway to margin expansion. And I agree with you. I think that there, it probably won't be accompanied by a press release, but you should over time see companies that are aggressively deploying this stuff have both better margins and actually reduced churn, which is in a lot of business models, the more important kind of like unveiler of kind of like growth. And so I think that there is going to be actually a real sorting of enterprises based upon their kind of in eagerness and ambition and kind of deploying AI against internal systems that right now are operating kind of fine, but actually they in a competitive landscape sense are going to fall behind very quickly. And I also think that this press release probably does catalyze like companies that have had kind of operations officers who have been like, well, you know, I'm not sure there's there, and this is not something that we can do because it poses all kinds of risks, are now getting calls from their CEOs being like, this does not, what you're saying does not conform to like what this company is presenting. So we really need to look at this. And I think that the, it's not just the OPEX savings or it's not just the cost savings. I think the responsiveness of the organization to like inbound sales or outbound sales to kind of like customer service, that's where the real performance or competitive differentiation is going to happen.
Yeah, I think this should, to your point, Brett, accelerate revenue and sales growth as well. Because if you can, you know, better serve customers when they have questions, that is helpful on conversions as well. Or just supporting agents, you know, sales agents. I think that'll end up, you know, accelerating revenues across the board. That, you know, it probably will even reduce sales cycles in more complex industries. If you're able to, you know, grab all of the information you need instantaneously from a chatbot, that does help, you know, kind of those inbound or, you know, those first touch points with new potential customers.
100%. I could use that just for, I was looking at cellular plans, right? And it's like, even within the same company, it's impossible to figure out which plan of theirs is actually what I need. And then you're like, okay, if I sign up with, you know, four other people, then that really changes the calculus. Then you go cross company, get me a chatbot for that.
Right. Well, yeah, it would be interesting to have maybe chatbot, like in your example, Sam, having a chatbot sit on top across multiple companies. So it's kind of a way to compare and contrast different, you know, commodity type products out there in the market.
Yeah, I think actually that's, if companies don't aggressively adopt this, that's what they're going to be subject to. As in, right. Companies should really want you to directly interact with them, because or else there's going to be like a great white shark of like basically negotiating on behalf of the customer to get the best product that then commoditizes an entire sector using an AI agent like one level above them.
Right.
And it really cuts against, you know, Google's business model, where it's not just in, cause at first it's an answer agent. It's like, well, what's the best cellular plan for me, given I have, you know, a wife and two kids and like one of the kids is going to get a smartphone or whatever your particular situation is. And I'm going to travel internationally, you know, and you can question and answer it. It becomes a whole nother level of kind of, interestingness and aggressiveness. If it also then kind of executes and signs you up for the service and maybe signs you up for a hybrid of two different services that particularly meet your needs. That'll be really, you know, interesting.
And even to your point, Brett, it becomes even more compelling when it has already understood all of those points you just brought up, that you have a wife, that you have two kids, that you are planning to go to Europe, and it can just direct you to the best solution without you even having to feed that information. It just already is aware of what, you know, contextually you would be interested in, given all of the information it's been collecting on you. I think that's where, you know, it becomes something that sits atop kind of the current market structure we're used to today for marketplaces and some of these other, you know, industries.
And maybe on the topic of cutting against Google, Claude 3 announcement comes out. Google, it seems, I don't know, there's a lot of videos of Sergey speaking and seems like people hoping that he'll right the ship and what happened with Gemini. Brett, what do you think's going on with Google? And then, and then we can talk about Claude 3 and it's, I would say, pretty impressive performance from what we've seen thus far.
Yeah, so Claude 3 is Anthropic, or Claude is Anthropic, call it large language model company's name for its language model. And they just released or announced Claude 3, and you can play with it starting today. And it benchmarks very favorably versus GPT-4, you know, and in fact, given the benchmarks that they present, it looks like it's better than GPT-4 in a number of areas, including coding, which previously was kind of an area where Claude was weak relative to GPT-4. So very impressive results. And another small company you may have heard of also released a large language model that was supposed to be competitive with GPT-4, say a month or so ago, and this is Google, and it's Gemini Ultra model. And not only, so there, a whole controversy has emerged around Gemini because the way in which they've draped kind of like reinforcement learning atop it and really tried to guide the model to prevent it from producing biased information has resulted in kind of very kind of like not whitewashing, but color washing of history in a way that's extremely embarrassing. If you ask, you know, to generate an image of four German soldiers from 1935, you know, they will be of all different kinds of ethnicities, many of which were being at that time about to be kind of attempted exterminated by Germany. So bad. But that actually occludes the fact that the model that they released is also just worse than GPT-4 in a number of different areas. And they did all kinds of PR spin to present it as better. It just is not as performant. And it's being released a year later. And so given the resources that Google has, the data they have, the talent they have, that they can't produce a model that is even competitive with state of the art from a year ago, just, I think, shows how much waste of energy is going on inside the organization at a very high level. Like, I think that's the best way to interpret it. It's like there is lots of stuff happening there that is not contributing to the end product. And I think you can interpret it in all kinds of ways. My chosen interpretation is that they are in the thick thorns of the innovator's dilemma, that search itself is a cash flow geyser, and people don't want to do anything to disrupt that cash flow geyser. Unfortunately, language models, by their nature, actually disrupt it. And so the organization is always, even if they recognize that's the future, all of the people inside the organization are going to be kind of fighting against jumping into that future. What do you all think?
Well, Brett, I actually have a follow-up question to this, and I don't know that I've asked you, but more so on the marginal performance gains that we're seeing across the board on LLMs versus distribution and how you weigh, you know, the importance of a model performing, you know, call it 10, 15x better than another model that is, you know, a bit out of date versus being able to distribute that model to the end consumer. Because I think of, you know, Google with Gemini, if they had gotten it right, they do have that distribution to billions of consumers and internet users. And, you know, we're still waiting to hear from some of these large mega tech companies, Apple, Amazon, that have assistants that were kind of the precursor to, you know, how we've been introduced to large language models. So I'm curious how you balance the difference between, you know, performance gains that we're seeing versus, you know, being able to get that model into a consumer's hand. Like even Claude versus OpenAI and ChatGPT. ChatGPT has a significant, you know, kind of, they're already running with distribution. Claude, you know, I don't know that many listeners on this brainstorm would have even known if, you know, we didn't bring it up a few times before.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, and it probably, there's a different answer to the degree of importance on the consumer side versus the enterprise side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like Siri is a joke right now. Apple is, you know, way behind in AI, obviously. Like, it literally is like woefully incompetent relative to even talking to GPT via the ChatGPT app. And when they upgrade Siri, they're instantaneously going to be like hitting, you know, all their iPhone users with the default voice mode being much, much more powerful, assuming they ever update Siri, much, much more powerful than kind of like anything else. And like more important even than distribution is like, or related is, given that distribution footprint conceptually, they should also be able to make it to get the product on an improvement trajectory because they're getting all right. that feedback from data, from right. from users. And so I think that's, in some ways, it is the key question about kind of the consumer facing enterprises, where like Google also should be able to push these products to their users, to all of their Office Suite users and to all of their Android phone users as, hey, here is the default. If you don't change anything, this is the voice interface you get. And you, the consumer, don't even know that it's worse than GPT-4. You think it's basically state of the art. And over time, it becomes state of the art because of the feedback you're providing. Right. I think that's a valid, essentially, argument to make. And on the enterprise side, an enterprise buyer is saying, hey, I'm going to wrap an API around this. It's going to inform my, my sales center, like in Klarna's case, or my customer service center. And like a marginal difference in kind of like the rate of responsiveness and correctly kind of like delivering an answer to a customer is worth, you know, maybe millions of dollars to me. So I'm not just going to be like, oh, you're Google, I'm going with the brand name. Instead, I'm going to like, you know, test them in competition with each other and go with the one that wins. So I think that's potential answer. Go on.
But Sam. But at the same time, it's like, given how fundamental these are, I think people are, enterprises still hesitant, as they always are, to go with someone new. It's like, you're like, I'm going to build all of this on to a company that's going to go bankrupt in a year and then start over, right? So it's like, there is that constant battle in the enterprise world.
Yes. And it's more so with the incumbents and, OpenAI relies on the Microsoft relationship to some degree to kind of like attest to the fact that they're going to be around. And even the corporate shakeup or non-shakeup, I guess, at OpenAI, I think has probably spooked some enterprise customers. And yeah. Same, like Anthropic took funding from both Amazon and Google in part to kind of, I think, signal to enterprise customers, hey, we have basically like if Anthropic gets onto the rocks in terms of its balance sheet, there is probably a ready and willing buyer that will keep its services running. And enterprises probably take some comfort from that. But if you get into a state where these models are not just kind of like answering the incremental chat, but having to do more and more complex workflows, like, you know, they're answering the chat, they're also kind of like integrated with your backend system where they're executing the order in some way, then the marginal difference in performance compounds, because like any error rate in any step in the process, kind of like you have 20 steps in the process. And so, you know, it's like the, you know, 0.99 to the 20th power versus 0.999 to the 20th power is actually a really meaningful difference. And so as models get more agentic, as in they're executing multiple steps and deciding what next step to do, then the performance differentials become actually much, much more important. And so in some ways, these benchmarks are a little silly, as in, am I going to be able to tell the difference in how well Claude is writing versus Gemini Ultra on like summarize this paragraph? Maybe not, or maybe only marginally, and maybe it's very subjective. And it is kind of like demonstrating potential capability for a future in which they are doing much more complex things.
I think I agree with the take that performance will matter more on the enterprise side. But I think one nuance here is that you still have human decision makers in the loop, as in there is a CTO involved in having to pick which model the company needs to go with. And given how fast the space is moving, the safe pick is going to be, call it Microsoft OpenAI, because you know Microsoft is behind it, or even Claude with, you know, backers such as Amazon and Google, where if they went out, went out of their way to find the most performative model today, but it didn't have the right backing or the right management team, and in, you know, a couple weeks, you know, given how fast this space moves, you know, they're already lapped, then that CTO's, you know, seat in kind of an influence within the organization becomes questionable. Versus, you know, if they just picked OpenAI and Microsoft and OpenAI don't deliver, that I think can be forgiven, versus like going out of your way to try to find something that is just slightly more performative. But I think over the long term, performance will matter, but it will be at the margin of a few very, you know, it's, I think the market has to consolidate first.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this whole conversation has been closed ecosystems, right? It's like open source has pretty strong staying power. Whether or not it gets better is a different question, but
right.
Picking an open source solution is the alternative. And I think it is interesting that the conversation has not gone in that direction, even though I think there's a big belief that open source is the long-term winner here.
I think that, and this goes back to your point about distribution, Nick, like actually Meta has probably the most powerful distribution engine of digital content in the world.
Right.
And they are, one, it means they have a huge pool of data they can use to train these models. And two, they are, espousing and laying out a strategic playbook of delivering open source models that can serve as kind of like the AI model, like backend infrastructure for enterprises. And they're willing to give it away because if they have the most powerful model with the best tooling against it, that'll make their consumer facing experiences that much more compelling and potentially allow them to navigate around kind of like the Apple iOS ecosystem and the Android, you know, platform, that duopoly in a way that's better for their long-term interests. And I think that's like a credible and super interesting strategy, because like then their distribution up against the consumer will improve their model, feeding into like this back-end open source engine for a lot of enterprises that build on top of it out there. And no enterprises are going to have concerns about Meta going bankrupt. And like they make the money off of becoming that the kind of like customer facing like interface for, you know, companies through WhatsApp, or from the consumer level that's choosing like which flights you do. Like it actually becomes a potential replacement for traditional search activity today. I think they're, and it's all packaged because they can do very, very powerful models and very light footprint, because they're operating on open source and they have a ton of data. It ends up in the eyeglasses that Nick's going to be wearing a couple years from now, and probably has a pair of today, that look stylish and people will rely upon. So,
yeah, it's interesting times for sure. It is. I mean, we've said it a few times, probably every other week at this point, but just how fast the space is moving, it still just, I think, blows my mind, like every time a new announcement. And at this point, we shouldn't even be surprised, but it still is surprising every time. Like just the pace of innovation here is, I mean, it's hard to even comprehend.
Yeah. And yeah. I'll just like circling back to Google, shipping a model a year late that is not as performant as state of the art, in traditional computing space, because you know typically computers fall like by half in terms of costs every 2 years. Right now, AI models are falling by half every 5 months. So it's the equivalent of being like 5 years behind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they really are like dramatically behind. And there needs to be, I think, a real organizational shakeup to wake up that organization. Like, and it's almost like the market has to force them to do it. Like, is Sundar going to get fired without first the stock price?
Check Poly Market. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Well, what are the odds now that he gets fired? Do we know?
I don't know. Let's see if there's a market for it.
I suspect you need equity price action to actually force them to do something major.
So Sundar out as Google CEO in 2024 is currently trading at a 22% chance.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things can change quickly. I do think, Brett, we should, I know we have charts, whatever, but it's like, just in hearing this conversation, we should put out kind of the AI rankings of, it's like, okay, you know, Google, here's the things cutting against it. Here's the pros, here's all these other things. Cause I haven't seen a very clean graphic of that. And it is something that could be likely updated on a weekly, monthly, quarterly, depending on how quickly these come out. Right. But it's like Apple, clearly incredible business, but way behind at AI, but it's okay. Cause their auto team who delivered spectacular results are about to fix the day. Right. But it's like Apple, good, great at other things, but behind in AI. Google, as you said, innovator's dilemma, you know, incredible business with search, but clearly lagging and can be dimensioned how far they're lagging. And I think it's probably worth kind of tracking that and putting it out.
I'll stick up for Apple here because I've been on Apple, you know, people have been calling me out for hating the Vision Pro, I will stick up for Apple here in that this is typically how they operate. You know, they're usually late to the party when there is new innovation. You know, how long did it take for them to get the Vision Pro out? You know, it's been a decade plus of VR innovation and, you know, it took them that long. So I do think they're just buying their time and, you know, watching what has happened with Google is probably, you know, giving them even more reason to stay on the sidelines until something is figured out. And they're probably leaning on and having the same conversation, which is, we have the distribution. Why do we need to rush a product? That would be my guess is, you know, why they're waiting.
And I think that the challenge with AI in particular relative to other software products is you don't know what it's capable of when you release it.
Yeah.
As in, you know, like imagine like somebody opens up a menu item and there's a menu item that you didn't even realize was there that is there when you release the product. That's like previously you're like doing lots of engineering and user interface. Like, do we need this option in this thing? Well, AI products have options that you didn't explicitly design in, and you're only way to find out what's in there is to release it. And that's what's very scary for these incumbents. It's like, did the Gemini team kind of know how it would respond to a question about, you know, German sculptures in 1940? No, they didn't. And they, even the way in which it answered that question was because they were so worried about another question, which is like, what is a corporate, generate me an image of a corporate CEO. They were worried that if you did that based upon the available data, the model would present like a bunch of middle-aged white guys as the image. And so they're like, we have to stop that. That's going to get us in real trouble. And that's how they got into trouble on the other side. And so I think in this space, it's actually like shipping has risk, but it's the only way you figure out what your things are capable of. You don't have the internal like resources to actually fully audit what the model is going to do. And so in some ways, having the broadest distribution platform is the is a really dangerous place to be, because you know everything that's going to go wrong with that model is instantaneously going to be figured out. And so you are almost guaranteed subject to like a bad media cycle on release. Whereas if you're a small company and you release it and you're kind of expanding over time, then one, like your kind of the amount of press attention you get when you first release is much lower. The number of people working with it is much lower. So like the, call it flaws in the models get surfaced like serially as opposed to all at once. So it does pose a challenge for anybody with a brand to manage.
Yeah.
I think we should end it there. There are other topics we should discuss as well. Maybe, you know, we got the lawsuits coming in against OpenAI. That seems to be splitting people on Twitter as well. But maybe we'll save that for next week's brainstorm.
All right. That's our show. Sam, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone.